When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Have you been using Mint to manage your finances? First, you probably know the bad news. Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There is a better alternative. Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. I have been using Monarch Money for over a year now, and it makes my weekly money dates so much easier and a lot less stressful. I tried all of the other personal finance apps, but they just didn't work for me. I love Monarch because I can see exactly where my money is going and track my goals all at the same time. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, your investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Monarch has a tool that also lets you easily import your data from Mint so you can keep all of your tags and categories. And unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, very intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. And one of the features I love most is Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, your family, or your financial advisor. You can invite them to your account at no extra cost. They get their own login, and you can have a joint view of your finances. Monarch is also the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up automatic rules for transactions. You can go to town with Monarch. Plus, they have ad-free privacy you can trust. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of the show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Money myths. We talk about them a lot on the show, but in this Ask Shauna, I'm sharing the money myths that I think you need to know about. Hey there, welcome back to Everyone's Talking Money. I am your host, Shauna, and I am so thrilled you are joining me on this Ask Shauna episode where I talk openly and freely about a listener question. If you're a regular here, thanks so much for coming back. And if you're new here, these episodes, I like to keep things a little bit loose, so we feel like we're just hanging out having a bit of a conversation. They're a little less produced episodes of the regular episodes that you hear Mondays and Wednesdays, but it is so fun for me to answer your questions and just to really have a time to talk to you about money, the things going on in money, your feelings about money, and so I really appreciate these questions, and I would really encourage you, if you have a question and maybe you're a little nervous about asking it, please know that you can keep your question completely anonymous. I do not need to know who you are. You can give me as many details as you would like or as little as you would like. But I will have the link in the show notes if you want to submit and ask Sean a question. So this episode was inspired by a question from Lorraine. Lorraine says, Shauna, I have been listening to the show for over 5 years now and never miss an episode. You cover so many great topics. It's so much fun to think about my money from lots of different perspectives. I know you've done some shows on money myths, but I'm curious what some of your biggest money myths are that you think we need to know about. I'm just like everybody else and think money is super scary, but I always feel so welcomed on your show and you make me feel like even just for a few minutes, I don't have to worry about money so much. That's what inspired this question. So thank you. Lorraine, this is a great, great question. First, I just want to thank you for being a listener for over 5 years and never missing an episode. That is quite a feat. Like, I think you deserve some sort of cape or something. We have done over, I think I'm inching near 1,200 episodes right now. So I just want to thank all of you that are listening, that are subscribing, that are sharing this with your friends. That is one of the best ways we can keep this show going for many more years is to continue to get more and more listeners. So if you've got a friend, and I mean, chances are, of course, they want to learn about money, grab their cell phone, subscribe to the podcast, and tell them to start listening to the show. But I really like your question. You're right. We've done a lot of episodes on money myths and lots of things that I've asked our guests on the show, but it's been a while since I've done a show where I've talked about some of my personal money myths and some of the things that I think you need to know about. So thanks for asking. It's fun for me to have this time to chat about that. But before we get into all of these juicy money myths, I just wanted to remind you that my course on F Your Money is open for enrollment. Right now, the open period is until April 3rd. You have until April 3rd to sign up. And I've got just 20 spots open. You can find out all the details at etmpod.link/unfmoney, or the link will be right in the show notes. All right, so let's start talking about some of those money myths. I think there's a lot of words that we could sub in for myth. We could talk about misconceptions, we could talk about false money beliefs. I think the idea is those things that we maybe just inherently think are true about money, but we don't know. There isn't a pulse check of whether this is a right thing about money or a right way of thinking about money or it isn't. And I think the thing I want to talk about myths, and I tried to come up with some that were maybe a little bit different than we've covered on the show, is that maybe there are some things that you don't even know are present in your life, some things that we're just like our blind spots, right? Like our financial blind spots, and we all have them. If you think about driving in a car and there's always that area you can't see, and now cars are really smart, right? They beep at us or make some sort of noises if we're going to try to pull into the other lane. But I'm old enough to remember cars that didn't do that, or maybe you have a car that doesn't do that. And so you find yourself like looking, you know, 15 times before you change lanes, like specifically on a big highway. Well, we can feel that same sort of way about our money. There are these blind spots that we just don't see, and things kind of come about and we're like, where did that come from? Or why do I have that feeling? Or, you know, I have a good job and I make good money. Why am I stressed about money? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Or envy. We can be really envious or jealous of our friends, and we can look at the exterior of their life and think that they have everything together. But reality, they're dealing with their own financial blind spots. They're just not openly talking about them. And I don't know if we're ever going to get to a time where we're able to talk about money from a really open place. I think there's a lot of great things happening. Salary transparency, all of those movements are really helping the cause. But I think it's important that we not only share the highlights of our money situation, but we also share the things that we are struggling with. And I think about when I'm with my girlfriends and we go out and we have coffee or tea and we sit around and we talk about good things, but we also talk about the hard stuff in life. And it's that community aspect that it just sort of makes you feel better, even if nothing is actually solved in that particular meeting. Maybe you have your favorite drink and you have, for me, it's a dessert. I've always got to have some sort of dessert. And I feel better when I've left that experience, but nothing has actually changed for me. And so my hope, my mission, my goal, something that you can help me with, is that we can get to a place where we can do that same thing around money without all of those nasty side effects: shame, jealousy, bitterness, judgment, fear, anxiety. I mean, to some extent, those emotions are just going to be part of the process, because money is this primal need. It's this thing we need, like food and water, and we can't escape that. I wish we could. It would be really nice sometimes, wouldn't it? To just operate in a world where we just did what we wanted to do and there wasn't any sort of hierarchy or monetary exchange. But I know I'm living in a complete fantasy world right now. I'll come back to Earth. So the first myth that I want to talk about, this is a really personal one for me, and it's that your self-worth doesn't equal your net worth. And I think it's so hard to separate yourself from money having that kind of power in your life, because we watch how our parents interact with money and we grow up having some sort of frame of reference of what we can spend money on, what we can't spend money on. But more importantly, the things that aren't talked about, the emotions, the feelings, the anger, the angst, all of those things around money that are not openly shared. And we just don't know how to like compute that in our little bodies, in our little brains. And then we grow up to be adults and we have some of those same feelings. And I have had money coaching with people who I would tell you they made so much money. I'm talking millions and millions of dollars. And their net worth was, I mean, great. We would probably, a lot of us would trade positions with them, but they had still a really low self-worth and they didn't understand it. Like they would ask me these questions of, if I look on paper, my money looks really good, but I still don't feel good about myself. And so I think when we attach our self-worth with our net worth, we're setting ourselves up for a situation where no matter how much money you make or have, if you don't feel self-worthy, if you don't feel worthy yourself, if you can't find a place to love yourself without all of the stuff, without all of the money, if we add in any amount of money, it's not going to change that. It's not going to suddenly make you feel worthy. And I know it's really easy to talk about this when you're in a place of having some sort of net worth. So I'm very conscious of that fact. And for a lot of you listening, it may be, if I just had more money, my gosh, things would be so much better in my situation. I just want you to think about this, that when you're out and you're at your job or whatever you do for a living, whether you're a stay-at-home parent or whatever your situation is, if we only attach meaning in life to money, wow, that's just so fickle. I have seen lots and lots of scenarios where people had a lot of money and that money went away, or they lost their job, or somebody got sick. And I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but we have to find a place to love ourselves without money being in the conversation. You know, if I was sitting across from you and I was describing you to somebody else, I probably wouldn't say, well, they are 5'7", they have brown hair, they have blue eyes, they have a muscular build, they're fun loving, they always cook a great meal. And then I probably wouldn't follow that up with, and they have X amount of dollars in their bank. Like, I just wouldn't use it as a descriptor. And yet we do that as humans. We use money as a frame of reference, a hierarchy, seriously, for how we feel in the world. And so if I can just give you any piece of advice on that, it would be to try to figure out how you can feel worthy yourself, whether you make money or you don't make money, whether you have a lot of money or you don't have a lot of money, because that, my friend, That is a place of power. That is something that nobody can actually take away from you. Okay, we're going to go a little bit lighter for the next thing. The next money myth I want to talk about is buying a house is always better than renting. I know there are people on both sides of the coin. You both have very strong arguments. Some people feel very, very strongly that you are throwing away money if you are renting. But oh, I think this is such a big myth because buying a house is an expensive proposition wherever you live. It requires a lot of upfront money and it's a commitment. It's a commitment for a certain period of time to live in that house, to pay the bills, things are going to break. There's just a reality with owning a home. And renting, we all know, yes, you pay your money. And if something breaks, you have a landlord, that management company, somebody that comes in and fixes those things. And that's kind of brilliant. I kind of like that model. So I think with everything that we talk about financially, we can't just say black or white, this is good, this is not good, do this, not this. We can't do that. And particularly in this scenario, because there are lots of reasons why renting might be better for you. Maybe you don't plan to stay in that city for a long period of time. Maybe you're dating somebody new and you're like, I don't know, are we going to get married? I'm not sure what's going to happen. Maybe you want to travel. Maybe your job is a little insecure. There are lots of reasons why paying rent actually makes very good sense. So let's just try and get rid of that one, okay? Three kind of ties into number one. So it's this idea that you'll feel happier when. I hear a lot of people say this to me over and over when they're talking to me about money. You know, I would feel happier when I got to this point, or when I made this amount of money, or when I could buy this thing, or when I was able to start my business, whatever it might be, fill in the blank. This goes back to our idea of self-worth doesn't equal net worth. You aren't probably going to feel happier when you reach that mark. I probably shared this story many, many times, but many years ago now, well over 15 years now, I got bought, but definitely had a big payment, my dream car, my dream car. It was so expensive. I feel really embarrassed even telling you how expensive it is. Let's just say the monthly car payment was somewhere close to $1,000. It's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But I had longed for that car forever. And I thought that car would make me, I don't know, fill a hole, would make me feel better, all sorts of things. I'm going to tell you, the minute I drove that car off the lot, oh, I felt so good. It was so good driving that car. It smelled so nice. I felt good in that car. All the wrong reasons to purchase that car were the reasons that I purchased that car. Now, I did do it because I got a nice tax deduction for it. So there was some logic behind buying this car, but still, I just had no reason that I needed to actually own this car. And I did. I paid it off. I got it right before I got divorced. I paid it off all myself, which was a victory for me. And then I ended up selling the car and getting a far more practical car, and thought, I am never going to make this decision again, because I definitely felt like having this thing would make me feel happier. And it didn't. Actually made me feel really stressed out because I knew I had to make that payment every single month. So just an example. The next money myth I want to talk about is the myth that it is too late for you to save for retirement. And if you're in your 20s and listening to this episode and you're starting to save for your retirement, kudos for you. Just keep going. Just keep going, because time is on your side. I promise you things are going to work out great. If you're listening to this episode and you're in your 40s or your 50s and you haven't started saving for retirement, I know how that feels. When I got divorced, the entire retirement savings that my ex-husband and I had put aside, he got to keep, and I walked away with $0. and a lot of debt. And I was very stressed out in that situation. It took me many years to be able to have enough money to start paying for retirement. Remember, I had the very expensive car payment that I was paying for. And I can look back and shame myself for years for not making a different decision, but it doesn't help me. If we look back and we look back at the decisions we made in our life, specifically around our money, and we're not happy with them, there's nothing we can actually do about them to change the past. But we can start today. So if I can give you any kind of motivation, go online, open your retirement account if you do not have one. If you have one right now, literally pause this episode and say, how much money can I contribute this month? If it's $20, if it's $100, if it's $1,000, just execute that. Transfer that money over. Set that up on auto payment, auto deduction. Get it automated so you don't even have to think about it. If you make more money, great, fantastic. Send that over towards retirement. But it's not helpful if you keep yourself in a place of feeling like should have, would have, could have with your money. It's not moving you forward. So just make a choice today. Life does not happen biweekly, so why should your payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin, it's an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Listen, the money you get from Earnin, it could do a lot of things. Maybe you spend it on a gift for someone special in your life, or in my case, an unexpected and very expensive trip to the vet for my pup Winnie, or maybe you use the money towards your upcoming rent payment. There are lots of ways the Earnin money could go to use. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability, security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin, T-A-L-K-I-N, money, under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin money under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Want to know the number one money question I'm asked? It's how to get started investing without being overwhelmed. So if you're asking yourself the same question, then you have to check out the Investing for Beginners podcast. The hosts, Dave and Andrew, they break down investment terms and strategies in a way you can finally understand. I love that they're making investing accessible, and they have an entire podcast dedicated to helping you invest better. Even if you're not ready to start investing, they explain the stock market and financial updates so you can really understand what is being said on the news. If you're ready to learn more about investing, I'd recommend you start with two of my favorite episodes. Listener Q&A, how do you start investing with $1,000, where they explain how you get started right away, and Back to Basics of Building Your Portfolio, where they explain how to build a portfolio from scratch. The Investing for Beginners podcast is a great way to start expanding your relationship with money. Find Investing for Beginners podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So we're talking about my biggest money myth that I want to share for you. And this one is one that I think to some extent we all feel some sort of connection to this one. It's this idea that I'm worried I'll never have enough money. And there's a lot of layers of complexity to this money myth. For one, if we watch TV, or we, I would say even if we are on social media, there is a lot of messaging being pointed at you that reaffirms that you're not going to have enough money. This is how retirement companies operate. This is a lot of the financial products. This is a lot of the news cycle is focused on, you're not going to have enough money. So it kind of breeds and feeds into this worry that you might already have. So I want you to try to calm yourself if you can. Block out the noise as best as you can. If you're watching TV and a commercial comes on and you feel a sense of angst come over you, just please hit the mute button. Don't even listen to it. Like, don't let it even permeate your brain and your body. But let's say you do. Let's say you do hear the messaging. Here's one way to combat this myth. I talk about creating a mindful spending plan. It's one of the things that I help you do in my course on F Your Money, is help you create a custom spending plan for you. So this way, you know where your money is going, how much money you spend, and you're automating all sorts of things, including your money going towards all of these different goals, your emergency fund, your investments, your retirement, your kids' savings account, all of these different things. So the purpose of doing that is to give yourself a little bit of a grounding feeling that you know you're utilizing your money very intentionally in the best way possible. And so, yeah, you might not have enough money to like buy a tropical island. I'll give you that. But if you are utilizing your money in a way that's helping you move closer to your goals, then this idea of not having enough money doesn't really exist, because you're channeling your money in the direction that you want it to go. I hope that makes sense to you. So it's a little bit like reverse engineering this myth. If you find yourself in a place of a fear or freezing or fight or flight, you know, some sort of like PTSD type reaction around money, stop, take a breath. Your breath is your best friend. Take a breath. Just center yourself for a minute and think, is there something proactive that I could do a little bit differently with my money starting today? It doesn't have to be anything big, but a lot of these myths that kind of churn up in us, they are there because maybe, I don't know the right wording here, but there may be like a flashing yellow light of like, hey, okay, I'm over here. Let's try to do something about this if possible. And then also let's think about, do we actually need to worry about this myth? So those are a couple of things I want you to think about if you get stuck in a place of worrying about a myth, specifically like this one.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rena Ninen, the host of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Over the past few years, we've looked at how women around the world are changing societal norms to increase their economic power. This season, we're focusing completely on girls, how they're pushing for a brighter, more powerful future, and what the rest of us can do to set them up for success. Join us for stories about girl power, young women who are fighting for change, to give themselves a chance to live a life of their own choosing. That's season 6 of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, wherever you get your podcasts.
Talking about money is hard. You know this already. All over the world, people are taught to never talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. On 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meeting from executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines, host and financial conversationalist Carl Richards, we'll remove money from that list by having frank, funny, and often difficult conversations about money, the kind we're all told not to have, with guests from all walks of life. In each episode, Carl will invite a new guest to answer the question, what does money mean to you? Their answers will reveal much more than their attitudes about money, spanning revelations about identity, community, faith, family, and the true meaning of wealth. Tune in to hear deep conversations about money and the meaning it holds in our lives. You can find 50 Fires on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Karina Bemisterfer, host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast. Yes, you heard me right. Daily true crime. Every day, Morning Cup of Murder tells you a straightforward, short-form story about murder, true crime, cold cases, disappearances, serial killers, cults, and more. And I do that all in under 15 minutes. With over 3 years of stories and over 20 million downloads, the Morning Cup of Murder podcast has become a staple of so many people's daily routines. So why not add it to yours? Stream Morning Cup of Murder everywhere you listen to podcasts, and remember, stay safe.
So let's talk about a couple other money myths that I think are important. The next one is, my partner has to make more money than me. This one, I hope, is going to die a very strong death soon. You know, I think when I look at my mom's generation and probably all the generations before that, I didn't have access to them. The assumption was that if you are in a heterosexual marriage, that the man should make more money than you. That is the assumption. And that's actually the reality of what happened. There just weren't as many jobs available for women. And women really had to push to get in the workforce. Women couldn't have credit cards. They couldn't open loans without their husband's signature. Lots of things were just factually true about that. So it isn't so much of a myth of prior generations. It was somewhat of a reality that most people lived in. It's different now. Yes, the stats are still that women need to work about 2.5 months longer than men in order to make the same amount of money. And then if you are a person of color, you need to work a lot longer than somebody like myself, a white female. And so those numbers are just disgusting to me that that exists. But I still find that we get in relationships and we're hopeful, I think, that the other partner will ease our load, that they'll make more money than us, that there won't be this pressure around money. And maybe it's just an assumption that most of us have. It's not a bad thing. It doesn't make you a bad person to have this assumption. But I ask you this question, what if something happened to your partner and they couldn't make money or they couldn't make as much money? Would you still feel that connection with them? Would you still feel romantic with them? Would you still feel intimacy? Would you still feel like this is a worthy, good partnership? If the answer is no, then that's something I want you to think about. Why is that answer no? I'm not going to say that that's going to happen to you, but I've seen it enough times to know that this idea of buying into my partner has to make more money than me, sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. And I know a lot of heterosexual friends who are in relationships where the woman makes more money than the men, and that there is a internal kind of conflict that happens. Even if they're okay with that situation, they feel morally a little off. I know a lot of my friends have said, well, I don't know how other people would view me. I don't want them to look bad on my male partner. All of these kind of crazy assumptions that probably most people aren't making. And besides the fact, it's not anybody else's business who makes what money in the relationship. The only two people that matter are you and your partner. So if it's okay with you both, then who cares what anybody else thinks? This is my message around uneffing your money. It's getting rid of all of these myths and stereotypes that no longer fit you. They don't fit in your puzzle, so they don't belong in your frame of thinking. And so I hear this from so many couples, gay, straight, bi, every variety of couple, that this narrative kind of comes up and they don't know how to work through it. So if we take money off the table again and we just look at your partner, is there enough there for you to still want to have a relationship with them? That brings me into the next money myth. This is the idea that if I have money, that makes me a greedy person, or anybody who has a lot of money is a greedy person. I think this is a social narrative that has been built. And so we look at people in a position of having a lot of money and we immediately think they're greedy or they're not a great person. You fill in the blank. But I like to think about it this way. And again, there are exceptions, sure. I could probably name off quite a few people who have a lot of money who I would say probably very greedy, maybe not nice people. So of course, but I tend to think about it this way for you and me, the more money you have, the more people you can help with your money. So flipping it on its side so that it doesn't impair you, because if you look out in society and that is a money myth you believe, you also probably believe that of yourself, that if I make more money, then that means I'm a greedy person and I don't want to do that, so I'm just not going to make more money. And I find this a lot with my female clients and with my female friends, is having that sort of identity. So with any of these money myths, I think there's a point of looking in the mirror and saying, okay, do I think this of myself? And if the answer is yes, why? Where does that narrative come from? Can I identify that? And let me look at it and say, is it true or is it not true? And the things that are not true, can I disregard them? Can I say, these are not a part of who I am? These are not a part of my relationship with money. These are not going to get in my way of building wealth, of being successful, whatever. You fill in the blank of whatever makes you happy. All right, we've got two more that I want to talk about. The next one is that my debt makes me feel shameful. And this isn't really a money myth. I would say as something I just hear a lot. So this attachment of debt equals shame. And I want to blow this one up just a little bit. Not the feeling. The feeling is very valid, and so many people feel this way, and understandably so, because debt is stressful. It's money that you owe that you don't have money to pay for, and sometimes you can get in this cycle of looking back of how you spent your money and feel very shameful about the choices that you made. And so I understand those feelings, but I also think sometimes there is a way to look at debt from the lens of somehow that debt allowed me to get where I am right now. Maybe it put a roof over my head. Maybe it fed me. Maybe it fed my kids. Maybe it allowed me to start a business. Maybe if you have student loan debt, maybe it got me through school and got me a job. Now, whether or not it made sense to take out a student loan or to take on the debt, that's a whole other conversation. And quite frankly, not a conversation that I think you actually need to have, because you're not in that phase of life anymore. I want you to detach shame from having debt. And I want you to look at it from a different perspective, if you can, even for just a minute. Do you have a plan in place to pay off that debt? Can you take a little bit of extra money each month? And with one of the two debt payoff strategies, start putting a little debt towards either your highest interest debt or your lowest amount of debt. Can you just do a little? Just start somewhere, right? Again, we're going to automate it. We're going to get a mindful money plan in place. And we're going to start sending that money off and detach these feelings. All right, we're going to end with a personal fave money myth. And this is that there must be money secrets that some people know that you don't know. I love this one. I hear a variety of this one quite often. Like there is some sort of secret rubric or this like hidden book, right? And some people have access to it and you don't. And you feel really freaking left out of the conversation. There isn't. There aren't money secrets that some people know that you don't know. Sure, there are more sophisticated money concepts, absolutely. But I would say, you know, the cornerstone of being good with money and reaching your money goals is actually quite simple. But we want to make it very complex. And very confusing. And so I want you to just keep it simple. Do you have a spending plan in place? Does that spending plan accurately depict the spending that you do, the reality, every single month? Do you have your goals on there? Do you have money automatically going towards your goals every month? Are you putting a little aside for emergency fund? Are you auto saving some money for retirement? On top of that, are you emotionally working through your feelings, thoughts about money so that when some of these money myths come up, you could say, yeah, I used to believe that myth or I used to feel that way. But you know what? I'm in a better place. I know who I am. I know my lane. I know the direction I'm going. I know my vision in life. And I got my money going in that direction. If you can do that, my friend, that is the secret, actually. That is the secret. You will have won at the game of money, I promise you. All right. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a couple friends, get a couple more people listening to this show. And don't forget, if you want to sign up for the UnF Your Money course, you can go to etmpod.link/unfmoney. I promise you, this is like the most brilliant way that you are going to be able to help yourself, help your money situation, and help the future you. This is a completely different way of looking at and dealing with your money. It's from a very heart-centered place that's just going to make you feel good. I call it the other side of money. It's just a different way to do money. It's science-backed information I'm going to be sharing with you, plus my 20-plus years of working with people individually is pulled down into these 12 lessons that I'm going to share with you. Each lesson has an activity or an exercise, and they're easy. They're short, right? This is not complex. I'm not going to throw jargon at you, but I want you to really feel like you can move forward from a place of control, power, being centered in who you are. All right. I will see you back here in a few days, my friends. As always, you can have the show notes for all the links mentioned in this episode, as well as the sponsors of this show. All right, I'll see you in a few days.